One more time with those Mary Oliver words. Stillness, one of the doors into the temple. Thank goodness for those times when we have known that kind of stillness. I have experienced it a number of times, but tend to think that too often I have rushed by the door, not paying enough attention. However, a couple weeks ago, I had done it. I had finished my to-do lists, packed my bags, and said my goodbyes, and I was driving west of Reading on a rolling, green, hilly path, going off to my own personal retreat for 3 days and two nights where I would predominantly be quiet by myself in the midst of a community of people in silence. As I had been preparing for this retreat, more than a couple people had said to me, "Kent, didn't you have less than success on another silent retreat you had a while ago that you told us about?" So yes, I was remembering the time that I went to a weekend-long silent Buddhist retreat with limited eating, and about 10 hours into the retreat, I realized this was just not going to work for me. And I told the head monk I needed permission to talk, and I needed to leave. I told my friend goodbye, and then I darted out of the dark forest as fast as I could, and I got to the McDonald's. I remembered 10 minutes before closing time and ordered a supersized cheeseburger meal with so much enthusiasm I thought the staff was going to call the cops on me. But this time would be different. I knew it would be different. Entering the Jesuit Center, it's called, 10 miles west of Reading, the Jesuit Center, I was calmed by the waving tall grasses, the tall maples, and the walnut trees. The black walnuts were just imposing and gorgeous. The cardinals and the robins were chirping. The central building, which has many purposes, one of them is it's a dorm, it is beautiful, a bit intimidating. And so honestly, though, in those first few hours of being there, I felt a bit awkward. I was walking around trying to get a feel for the place. And I'm thinking, how do I feel right now? I didn't know how to describe it. I was uncomfortable. I know that. Fortunately, it did not take long to confirm that this silent retreat would bring contentment. Part of it is that this chapter of my life, Kristen and I have two smaller children and fast-paced jobs, so I knew I would like the quiet this time. It was different than last time. I read, walked on the gorgeous grounds, ate and slept. I sat on a bench, walked, ate, slept, read, did it again. I was very grateful for the opportunity. Started to feel really good, like my batteries were being charged. I felt centered and strong. One of the key words that kept coming, I said, I felt so strong being here. I missed my family, but I did not want to leave. But on the ride home, coming back, I was just filled with laughter and peace. Tracking my life journey with issues like busyness and quiet certainly connects back to the fact that I'm an alcoholic, now a recovering alcoholic. This summer, I hope to celebrate 25 years of sobriety. Thank you. And for a long time, I had a saying in the ministry, I say, well, I'm an alcoholic, I am not a workaholic. But about 8 or 9 years ago, I was visiting with an elder member of the church, Liz Charles. She was fading at this time. She was not talking a lot, and we had had a very slow visit. It was kind of stilted conversation. She had low energy. So 45 minutes, an hour in, I was saying goodbye from her apartment, and she said, hey, I want to ask you something. Sure. Long pause. Do you think you're a workaholic? she asked me, and I was totally, it was like we had really not been talking about much at all for the whole hour. And this lightning bolt of clarity, I had never spoken with another human being about this issue in my life verbally. But in the couple weeks before she brought it up, I had been thinking about it. I thought, geez, I wonder if it's true anymore. So in the months and years to follow, I really have reflected on this with friends and colleagues, and Kristen and I have talked about it a lot. And how does this intersect when you're passionate about a vocation and a calling and all these cross currents? So over the last years, I believe that I am not a workaholic, but I sure do have some strong and impossibly some addictive ways of staying busy in a lot of ways. And I know I'm not alone. It's interesting how many folks talk about busyness these days. I actually am more interested in hearing folks who think they don't deal with busyness because so many people are busy. I know many retired people with economic capacity who say they struggle with busyness. I think that's a red flag in our society. I know that many of us struggle with, when someone asks you, how are you doing, is it helpful to say you're busy if that's just your normal state of being? You know, is that part of how you're doing? Is that who you are? Or, you know, so, and what does it say about you? What does this busyness mean? We're trying to be important. I don't know. A lot of different things for different people. And not everybody is busy, of course. But 3 years ago, we had our second son, Ellis. And a year after that, I went on tilt. My pinball machine really went on tilt for a while. And I had to surrender. This was not the first time in my life that I surrendered to significant change out of pain. The busyness of my life hurt. But I really accepted that I needed change. And for about 2 years now, I really have not been in addictive habits with busyness. And I've been really pushing back on things, and it's been helping me. But it's tough. Busyness is prevalent like groundwater in our culture. And at times, it's quite costly. Dr. Susan Coven practices internal medicine at the Massachusetts General Hospital. And in a 2013 Boston Globe column, Dr. Coven wrote, "In the past few years, I've observed an epidemic of sorts, patient after patient suffering from the same condition. The symptoms of this condition include fatigue, irritability, insomnia, anxiety, headaches, heartburn, bowel disturbances, back pain, and weight gain. There are no blood tests or X-ray diagnostics of this condition, and yet it's easy to recognize. The condition is excessive busyness." Excessive busyness, says Dr. Coven. Notice she doesn't name anxiety or depression, which are two things that are also prevalent in high percentage of our culture. So I'm grateful right now I have surrendered to the need, which what has actually become a desire, to be quiet and in nature. And of course, we can't always take three-day retreats. I've done this once in the last 3 or 4 years, and I'm a minister, so we can't all do that. But little periods of time. What are your ways to surrender to less TV, more sitting and talking with somebody, more quiet, more playing bridge, playing cards with friends? There are a couple main roadblocks. Like this is the symptom, I think. This is not the core, maybe psychological or spiritual challenge. The core, I think, are a couple areas, and I'd like to know your thoughts. Many of us suffer from unbalanced thinking, something like this. I am not worthy unless I am producing something. The work ethic run amok. I am not worth my weight if I'm not producing, doing something that's tangible. People in many different fields, I've been looking around, from religion, spirituality, business, are looking into this. The Harvard Business Review published an article showing the challenges of busyness and effectiveness, showing how people get locked up in this. So one study involves soccer goalies specifically, in techniques for defending penalty kicks. Harvard Business Review. So free kick, somebody has had a hard penalty. There's a free kick 10 yards in front of the box. The goalie has to stand on the line until the person kicks the ball. When the goalie stands essentially in the center, he or she is effective in stopping it 33% of the time. Diving left, 12% of the time stop. Diving right, 14%. So diving gets you a combination of 26% stops. Staying in the middle gets you 33%. Yet goalies stay in the middle about 6% of the time. People get paid a lot to analyze soccer and coach soccer. So something is going on there. I think it's probably connected in these business people think it's... Many of us are hardwired to think we have to be doing something. I don't want to let my teammates or my fans down and just stay lazy in the middle. In preparing this week, I ran this example by a stay-at-home parent, and he thought this really resonated for stay-at-home parents who too often are expected to justify what they are accomplishing during the day. Just staying home, just like just staying home or just in the goal, is often seen as not enough. So you have to jump. Jump for what? This is also connected to studies that they say show how our culture and our brains are working. You're driving home from shopping and you hit a snag in the traffic. It's slowed down. You're disappointed and frustrated. A lot of people will go on a long, crazy detour that they know is going to take longer to ultimately get home because I can't just sit here and do nothing through the slowdown, even though it's ultimately going to, in many cases, get you there faster than the long detour. So the point is, how does this apply to your regular life, your daily life, the decisions you're making? Why are you doing what you're doing? That's the question I think we all have to claim our power to ask. The question. Before I get a little more to that, the second major obstacle to many of us not slowing down and doing busyness for the wrong reasons is sometimes we are not comfortable in our own skin. Are you okay with being you without distracting yourself from being you by running, running, running? Are you comfortable with you? Do you love you? While on retreat, I had this mantra that just started coming to me. I can be me without running. Just that's what was coming up in my soul. I can be me without running. I can like me and the world without hustle, is what I think it meant. In China, as long as 2,600 years ago, Lao Tzu said, by not doing, everything is done. By not doing, everything is done. And for most of my life, I would say I either did not agree with that statement or I did not understand that statement. That's what I would have said most of my life. But the more, since my pinball machine went on tilt 2 years ago, I really have been in more quiet. And I have started to feel this reality that I still don't fully understand. Here in Northwest Philly, in the springtime, right now, hearing the chirping and singing of the birds has become a priceless symphony to me. Just love the birds right now. You can be you by not doing. And I hope you know that. So one way I've found in the literature to help us break this down is busyness of choice and busyness of no choice. Okay, so when you're doing things, can you break it down? Do you have a choice? So one possibly simple example that most of us could get or agree with, a single parent who has to hustle a lot for work, making ends meet, making the house run, and maybe taking a class, that adult probably does not have a lot of choice at that chapter of his or her life. Okay, what are other examples where you have choice? I think most of us, including me, spend a lot of our lives tricking ourselves into thinking we don't have choice of a lot of the things we're doing. So claim your power. Empowerment is in the mission statement of the church. Claim your power and and wrestle with this and make some decisions. In our curriculum, there are two spiritual exercises that I want to highlight. The first one comes from Stephen Covey materials. Many people have interacted with this in different ways. You take a bowl, which represents the time in your days. Time is not a choice. You do have 24 hours a day. That's not a choice. That's a given. And then you have big rocks and little rocks. And you put the big rocks in first of the things that are priorities, important to you. What do you want to do? Quality time with your partner? Take a walk. What's important to you? And then the smaller rocks can go in later. But this is the one Adrian... Did Adrian make up the saying or find it? When someone comes up with an option for your time, instead of saying, sorry, I don't have time to do that, say, sorry, it's not a priority. This really goes at the politeness culture. Say it to yourself. No, that's not a priority for my 24 hours of time fishbowl. That rock is not going to fit in there. It's not a priority. Instead of I don't have time. You do have time. And you make choices all the time. Many of us are making choices. We're coming up on summer with kids who are not in school. There are some more choices to be made about what you do and don't do. So claim your power. What's a priority? Are you going to be run? And if so, why? Is it worth it? Mary Oliver says, spending all day trying to count the leaves on a single tree... She is not deterred by people who call her foolish, because she is not. Taking off the coat of busyness frees her up to go half crazy with the wonder of it all. The abundance of the leaves, the quietness of the branches, the hopelessness of her effort. She is in that delicious and important place, roaring with laughter, full of earth praise. This is the good news of our faith tradition. These experiences of being full of earth praise are universally available to all. One of my favorite hymns is... You gotta do when the Spirit says do. You gotta do when the Spirit says do. When the Spirit says do, you gotta do, oh Lord. You gotta do when the Spirit says do. It's also true that you gotta stop when the Spirit says stop.